Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and ahead on the show today, we have an in-studio session from Miwi La Lupa. He's a New York-based singer-songwriter who took his last name from the Italian word for she-wolf. We'll hear about Mr. La Lupa's love of wolves, his wolf journal, and the longtime sideman's first solo album called New Way Home. Now, it takes guts for someone who normally works behind the scenes to step into the spotlight like that. And if you're already successful, there's a lot at stake. The producer Salaam Remy has worked with Nas, the Fugees, and perhaps most famously, with Amy Winehouse.
You made me miss the slick reggae. Have thought I didn't love you when I did. Can't believe you played me out like that.
Now, this go-to producer has released his solo debut, and it's nominated for a Grammy. We'll talk with Salaam Remy. Speaking of the Grammys, I gotta tell you about something Soundcheck is doing online this weekend. Two words. Grammy Bingo. Our producers have created a special bingo card for this Sunday's telecast on CBS, and we want you to play along with us. It's totally free, there are no prizes involved, but it will be fun. Fun will be had by all, and you can find out how on soundcheck.org. Basically, if an event that's on your card happens, like, say, someone wears sunglasses on stage, then you mark it off. It's bingo. It's Grammy Bingo on soundcheck.org. Follow us on Twitter, at Soundcheck, for running commentary from us this Sunday evening, starting at 8 p.m. Eastern. But today, we'll kick off the show with the front woman of the British band known as The Selector. Come on, how could we not start this conversation with a song called On My Radio? The Selector, formed in the late 70s, they played a style of music called two-tone ska, a high-octane blend of rock, jazz, and roots reggae, often with a social or political message. The group's frontwoman, Pauline Black, was hailed as the Queen of Ska, a crown that she still wears today. And she tells her story in a recent memoir called Black by Design and a new album called String Theory. Both bring Pauline Black to our Soundcheck studio. Welcome.
Thank you, John. Thank you.
This is quite a book. We learn many things about you, among them that in the great Beatles-Rolling Stones debate, you came down squarely on the side of the Rolling Stones.
Yes, I did, for my sins.
What does that tell us about you?
I'm not really sure. Maybe I just have a penchant for people who look like Mick Jagger. I don't know. Mick Jagger spoke to me in a way that I'm afraid the Beatles really didn't. They were kind of four mop tops who were relatively boring, I thought. I mean, fantastic music, but that's something that you come to realize as you get older. But at the time, my mother didn't like the Rolling Stones, and what my mother didn't like, I liked.
Right there with you. This idea of sort of being attracted to the outsider, perhaps, the person who doesn't have the clean-cut image, this becomes kind of a recurring thing. I mean, the book begins with you being told by your mom that you're adopted at the age of four, and that kind of feeling of being an outsider seems to have, you know, sort of driven a lot of the story of your life.
I guess, yes. I mean, I do still consider myself to a certain extent to be an outsider. I'm mixed race. My father was Nigerian. My mother was Jewish. I was adopted by working class white parents in Britain, near London, in the suburbs of London. And of course, by the time I was 4 years old, I was ready to go to school. So they had to tell me something because, you know, kids are always point out the elephant in the room. And I was definitely the elephant in the room at the school I went to. So it was, it didn't come as a shock necessarily, but it did make me think. And obviously, it gives you identity issues, I suppose, as you grow into teenage years. Everybody has identity problems at that time, and not knowing your mother or your father, your real mother or father, does tend to make you maybe a little more insecure than you would normally be.
Right.
But also, I think that the parents that adopted me were, I guess their attitudes would be considered racist these days. I would take a much more charitable view of that because most of Britain was that way at that time. We're talking about in the 50s.
Right.
And it was more ignorance than anything. I mean, they felt that they were doing right by adopting a black child. But, you know, trying to turn them white, as it were, is then something quite else.
So as you headed through your childhood, your teenage years, radio and music becomes a kind of a beacon for you in a way that maybe it is for many teenagers, but for you to a degree that's probably different from the other kids you grew up with. So when you first started hearing, say, American music, I mean Motown, black music on the radio, knowing that all your white classmates are hearing the same thing, what did that do for you?
That was just, it was euphoric. I mean, they came over as well. A lot of the Tamil artists toured to practically nobody in all kinds of drafty.
Just to say, when you say Tamla, that's our Motown.
Yes, it's, yes, yeah. Sorry. Yes, your Motown. And I remember the very first time that I saw Stevie Wonder, and he was just magic. I mean, I wasn't that much older, probably was similar ages or whatever. And I just remember looking at him and thinking, wow, this is completely different. He looks as though he's having real fun. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, these ladies hoved into view with these weird sort of, you know, wonderful hairdos, which I thought were real and not wigs. But, I mean, that was because nobody had told me. It was that just kind of began to open up the world. And from there, of course, Marvin Gaye came. And then, of course, Marvin Gaye made that wonderful transition to something which was a little bit more social commentary at the time. Mm-hmm. And I followed. And that was, it was like the information was coming from America about what it meant to be black. You know, I mean, James Brown named the nation black. And I thought, yeah, that's for me.
And Aretha Franklin demanding as a black woman, R-E-S-P-E-C-T.
Well, that was the other thing. As soon as the video that, I don't know whether it was a video then, I guess it was a film,
Of
her kind of strutting down the street, kind of singing this at full voice to a little black kid in, you know, Romford, Essex in Britain. That meant an awful lot.
A pivotal moment in the story of Pauline Black's life in the book Black by Design, hearing this song by Aretha Franklin. Aretha Franklin, of course, with Respect. Hearing Aretha, hearing Stevie Wonder, hearing the black American music of the late 60s and early 70s, a pivotal moment in the story of Pauline Black, the musician and actor, frontwoman of the band The Selector. Her memoir is called Black by Design. It is subtitled, Pauline, A Two-Tone Memoir. which is a great pun, you know, on the black and the white, but also on the musical movement known as two-tone.
Well, the Selector was part of a musical movement, and that movement was begun by the Specials, by the person who started the whole thing, which was, of course, Jerry Dammers. And he went to the same university as I did, along with one of the other Specials, Horace Panter, who plays bass. And I guess that two-tone really is a social and political stance, mm-hmm. and it is anti-racist and anti-sexist, and it has this wonderful black and white iconography and this cute little animated figure called Walt Jabsco, who is the original rude boy kind of thing, if anyone out there knows what that is.
Well, and the rude boys, I mean, they actually precede
I believe that the Walt Jabsco, the little cartoon for him, is based on either Peter Tosh or on Bob Marley, pre the Wailers, mm-hmm. that whole thing, when they were rude boys themselves and doing ska music.
Right. So rude boy itself is a term that, you know, we hear sort of in Clash songs, you know, Rudy Can't Fail and stuff, talking to this kind of young, disaffected, often from Caribbean families, you know, growing up in council housing in and around London and stuff. Those were the rude boys.
Those were the rude boys, yes.
But the thing about the two-tone, this kind of branch of ska, it was that it genuinely was black and white musicians, you know?
Yes.
Madness and the Specials and the Selector. I mean, the Specials were at the top of the charts for a long time, and you guys, as the Selector, had success right out of the gate. I mean,
you
basically joined the band, start writing songs, and like the first song you write ends up on the charts.
Yes, it was within 5 months. I think we begun the band in May 1979, and by October we had a top 10 hit, and we were out on tour with the Specials and Madness, which was the two-tone tour, which was this huge kind of juggernaut that sort of wended its way around the UK. Mm-hmm. And suddenly it was like overnight. All kids were going to school, you know, with sort of modifying their school uniforms and all this kind of thing, with lots of nice black and white checker iconography all over their satchels and stuff. And it was great times.
And so how was it for you to go from this childhood where you were the outsider to being right front and center in this movement that had, you know, this kind of neat collision of music and politics?
I didn't really think about that too much at the time. I mean, like I said, you're on a juggernaut. It's just going, and suddenly everyone is interested in what you have to say. I probably had too much to say, but I never let that hold me back. Yes, you find yourself saying all sorts of things that ordinarily, if you really gave it some thought, you probably wouldn't say. But, for my sins, I said them, and, you know, somebody must have taken notice because people still come to the show.
So the band was called The Selector. The song They Make Me Mad, you co-wrote this. So was this like the first effort at writing with the band?
It wasn't the very first effort. I had that song before I joined the band. But They Make Me Mad pretty much summed up where I was at the time, I think.
This is Pauline Black and the band The Selector from the debut album by the band back in 1980.
Use your mind, but since I never did your elocution rhyme, made me think that everything they said was fine. So I nod and wink and smile. I said I understood, yeah. I went all the way. You will make myself to the philosophy.
Make Me Mad from Pauline Black and the band The Selector. Pauline, the longtime frontwoman of this two-tone ska band that formed in 1979. The album Too Much Pressure came out in 1980. And this is on the heels of the punk movement, which is, you know, where we saw a lot of both embracing of black culture and a lot of skinhead resistance to it. You faced a lot of the same thing, right?
Yes, I guess we didn't really think too much about it at the time. It was like this wonderful melange of people would turn up to gigs. Some of them would be skinheads. Some of them would be absolutely fine. Mm-hmm. And others would be, let us say, a little right of center. Quite far right of center.
Uh-huh.
But a lot of it, was fairly meaningless, confused, ignorance, all of those things. But it made it quite difficult to deal with sometimes. Standing on a stage sometimes, having a sea of skinheads kind of Zeke Heiling at you.
Yeah. We're speaking with Pauline Black, musician, actor, author of the book Black by Design, a two-tone memoir. Selector, I mean, there's a record, String Theory, a recent record, but Selector also went through, as many bands do, we'll call it a hiatus, a breakup, after 1982, at which point you started getting into acting, including some, as you put it, some really dodgy shows over there in the UK. Do you still act today?
I haven't done anything for some number of years now. Mm-hmm. You can't really take the time out to do theatre acting and run a band as well, because shows have to be booked so far in advance, and plays go on for 3 months at right. the very shortest run.
Now, did you find as an actor that you were using the same kind of dramatic muscles as you were as a front woman?
I actually think that I learnt my dramatic muscles by going and doing acting. I mean, it's all good. I'm one of those people that I like to do a lot of different things, and if the opportunity presents itself, why not have a go? I'm not quite so maverick or quite so brave these days as what I used to be back then. It was like, hey, someone wants to put me in a play. Yeah, I'll do that. So it was all a bit like that. You just kind of learn on the hoof, really.
Yeah. So after, what was it, about 10 years, the Selector reforms, were you a different front woman at that point?
Well, I'd play Cleopatra by then. I'd play Billie Holiday by then. I'd done an awful lot of different things, and a bit of Chekhov too. So, yes, I guess I was different. You bring all those characters to play.
Let's hear something from the new Selector album. It's called String Theory. Is there a kind of, I mean, the two-tone movement really had this, as you said before, anti-sexist, anti-racist message to it. Has the message modulated because of changes in society in the 30 years since?
Well, when we got back together 3 years ago with the present form of the mm-hmm. Selector, we put out an album called Made in Britain, and a year later we put out the album String Theory. And Made in Britain really deals with multiculturalism. We felt that the anti-racist stance, people really understand that these days as multiculturalism. It's mm-hmm. really having to get together in these urban cities with lots of different kinds of people. Now, people have always done that, but now we have a word for it. And when you have a word for it, it makes it so much simpler, doesn't it? Everybody knows what they're talking about. So we were dealing with that on Made in Britain, saying that whatever color you are, we're here, and somehow we have to deal with each other, and that is the future and what comes out of that. So, and String Theory is really just taking it on and thinking a little bit about kind of, you know, my scientific background, that String Theory would suggest that we're all made of the same stuff. These little vibrating strings that are all the way through the universe. And that's what connects us. And there seemed to be this lovely kind of connect with our past then, this string that we were following from 1979 to present day. And really saying that we are all the same. All we have to do is embrace the fact that at the end of the day, we are all human beings. And the best thing we can do is just stop ourselves from messing this planet up any more than we have already.
Let's hear the song London's Burning from the album String Theory by The Selector.
Hi!
That's some music from my guest, Pauline Black, and her band, The Selector, from their latest album called String Theory, that's London's Burning, which mentions the verb occupy. Was that a deliberate sort of call out to the Occupy movement?
Yes, it was. Obviously the actual song deals with the riots that happened in London quite recently. And people's take on that. And I just feel very much that we have this complete disconnect at the moment between people who don't feel as though they are just disempowered, really. Mm-hmm. And those who have, as it were. And the situation we had in London was obviously very clearly that personified. And we felt that we ought to say something about that. The one thing we didn't want to do was get back together and just be a heritage band. It really didn't feel as though that was the right thing to do. It's very nice. We love it that people like our back catalogue. We love it that people come along to our gigs and want to hear all those things like On My Radio and Too Much Pressure. But it's not like we feel we want to force music on people. But I do feel that if you're in a band and you're a musician and you consider yourself to be creative in some way or another, then you better get on and do that. Mm-hmm. And not just consider that one's legacy is some payday.
Black by Design, the memoir is out. So is the new record by The Selector called String Theory. Pauline Black, a real pleasure having you with us on Soundcheck today.
Thank you very much, John. I really enjoyed it.
He said he loved me, but he loved the beat.
Up next, the singer-songwriter Miwi LaLupa hails from Buffalo, but now plays with the New York funk band known as Red Barat. He joins us to play music from his solo debut, next on Soundcheck.
Well, I dropped a nickel on the floor. What did I do? What did I do? I let it slide, slide, slide and roll away. Now like my mama said...
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. You may not know Miwi LaLupa's name, but he's played alongside many artists that you have heard. David Byrne, the Afrobeat bandleader Femi Kuti. He also plays in Red Barat, the New York band known for its own genre-mashing style called Brooklyn Bhangra. But now, Miwi LaLupa is stepping to the front of the stage with a decidedly new sound. The singer-songwriter and bandleader is here in the studio with his group to play songs from his brand new album called New Way Home. This song is called Radio. Here's Miwi LaLupa live on Soundcheck.
How could I tell you all I've done since June the 4th? Tell you there's a gal out west and another one way up where it makes me feel as though that I always have a place to go. What would you say if I don't wanna be your friend? How am I beginning when we just came to a place I thought I'd never have to know? No, I'd never have to know. So I hope to get this song on the radio. And I hope you hear this song on the radio. I wish that I could tell you I was with someone just last night. Tell you, but the last thing that I wanna do is end up hurting both of us. And you say this makes us grow. When is the right time to express my feelings true? How I think you want your cake and that you wanna eat it just the way you like it. So I'm smiling just for show. And I hope to get this song on the radio. And I hope you hear this song on the radio. say you'd move away if we ever did break it off. Now I'll call you the candle, and honey, you can call me.
Please don't call me,
because I cannot say no. How can I inquire of your timing and your choice? I'd love to scream and shout, but I'd so hate to lose my mind again. As it seems to come and go, so I hope that you turn on our old radio, and I hope you hear this song on the radio. 'Cause I won't be telling you on the telephone, and I will not face your face. Yes, the only place we both will know is on the radio. 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 On the
That song is called Radio from Miwi La Lupa. It's on his new album called New Way Home, but that's a live performance from Miwi and his band here in the Soundcheck studio with Connor Elms behind the drum kit, Timothy Allen playing electric guitar, and Jessica Hume playing the bass and doing backing vocals. Miwi La Lupa singing and playing the acoustic guitar. First, the song Radio, you saying, I hope I get this song on the radio. I hope you hear this song on the radio. Mission accomplished.
Yes, thank you.
Is this the first time this song has been heard on the radio?
It probably is the first time it's heard on the radio.
Well, the album's brand new. It's almost like a diary entry, isn't it? You know, I can't tell you all the things I did since June, whatever it was, June 4th.
The 4th, yeah.
So I'm putting it in this song.
Right,
is
right.
Is that songwriting for you, this kind of diary entry sort of journal thing?
I think it starts there and also ends there, too. No, all the words kind of are written into my wolf journal, and I kind of take it everywhere I go with me.
Your wolf journal. Okay. Yeah. So your name is Miwi La Lupa.
Yes.
La Lupa, Italian for the wolf.
Right. The she-wolf,
actually. The she-wolf, yeah. So why choose that name?
Well, I've been a big fan of wolves since I was 10 years old after reading Jack London books and watching White Fang. So,
So are you into wolf conservation and stuff like that?
Absolutely. I mean, people are killing them off left and right thanks to some farmers and some politicians and that kind of thing.
Well,
and
in part because they've made a big comeback in parts of the country where they had been missing for a while.
Right, right. Absolutely. And there's the Wolf Conservation Center up in Salem.
Mm-hmm.
Big fan of that place, and I get a lot of swag from them, like a wolf tags, and actually someone adopted a wolf for me from there.
You know that conservation center, you know who founded that?
Elaine Grimaud, yeah.
The classical pianist,
mm-hmm.
who has been on our show any number of times, and actually for a while in the 90s lived, I think it was in like rural New Jersey, with a bunch of wolves on the property.
Really?
Yeah. That didn't last too long, but she was seriously into wolves.
I'd love to meet her, so if there's any way you could hook that up, that'd be wonderful.
So this project of yours is a very, very different sound from what we've come to expect from you. I expect to see you with a bass trumpet. You know, we sort of come to know you as a brass player, as a sideman.
Sure.
I want to play just a little bit of the band Red Barat. You're a founding member of that band, right?
An original member.
An original member. I mentioned Brooklyn Bhangra before. Bhangra is this sort of Punjabi-inflected dance music, and this is what Red Barat sounds like. From the song Shruggy G by the band Red Barat. So, Miwi La Lupa, what are you doing on that track?
Well, I wrote a verse, so I'm singing and kind of featured as a singer and maybe rapper on that one, too. So,
Are you playing one of the many horns that we hear?
Yeah, bass trumpet.
Bass trumpet.
Mm-hmm.
So, talking about, you know, La Lupa, the she-wolf, there's a French expression, entre chien et loup, between a wolf and a dog, you know, for that part of the day or that's neither twilight nor night, or it basically means not one thing or another.
Sure.
So you've got this kind of entre chien et loup thing happening with your career as a side man who plays brass instruments and a front man who plays the guitar.
Right.
How do you sort of juggle those two things? Do they connect on some level?
Absolutely, they connect. And as we all know, as freelancers in New York City, I mean, you can go from playing a gig with Red Barat to the next hour playing a polka gig or something like that. It's just something you have to do if you want to make a living playing music. So,
well, this is the album's called New Way Home, brand new album from Miwi La Lupa, who's here in the Soundcheck studio with his band. You want to play the title track for us?
Absolutely.
All right. New Way Home, Miwi La Lupa with the band live on Soundcheck.
I decline your invitation to stay a little longer. Yeah, I've said yes before, but now a little stronger. As if I needed to see how you rearranged my old residence. As if I needed that old t-shirt and the junk mail I asked him not to send. I thought for a second there was effort in your evening attire. I thought for a second you had the look of desire. Was that the sign of a teardrop forming there in the corner of your eye? That the sound of regret when we said goodbye. I did I leave you crying as I walked down the cold steps? Did you hear me sighing, trying hard to forget? Do you know how hard baby, to leave you alone? Do you know I'm lost again, finding a new way home? Is it my imagination running wild in the night? Try to clear my mind,
as I walk neath the streetlight. As if a walk on a cold, cold night could make my mind feel light. As if I needed to ponder every wrong I'd love to right. The war now was over between you and little old me. I once held you prisoner, but now I set you free. I'll never know exactly how my true love goes on feeling, but I know this for sure, lady, I'm certainly dealing. Did I leave you crying as I walked down the cold steps? Did you hear me sighing, trying hard to forget? Do you know how hard it is, baby, to leave you alone? I'm lost again, finding a new way home. Did I leave you crying as I walked down the cold steps? Did you hear me sighing, trying hard to forget? Do you know how hard it is, baby, to leave you alone? Do you know I'm lost again? I found a new way home.
A New Way Home is the name of the song. It is the title track from the brand new album by singer, songwriter, and guitarist Miwi La Lupa. Performing here with his band in the Soundcheck studio, Connor Elms on drums, Timothy Allen on guitar, Jessica Hume playing the bass and backing vocals. So, Miwi, the album, in addition to the band, has a number of guest artists, people that you've worked with like Bill Frisell and people like Connor Oberst from the band Bright Eyes. It seems like they were just lining up to be a part of this collection.
Well, I feel extremely lucky. It's like a dream come true. When Monica Frisell, we were sitting and having lunch while we were making the record and listening back to Here I Am, she's like, this sounds really beautiful. Do you think I should have my dad play on it? I said, I mean, you know, like, well, you're the producer, Monica. I think, you know, it's your call, but yes. but he was really great to come in and record on a couple of the songs. As, you know, with Curtis Folks plays some trombone.
Amazing trombone player based here in New York. Yeah,
and my good friend Connor Oberst was so nice to come on over to my bedroom and lay some vocals down. And
so, was this a bedroom album? You know, on the laptop in the home kind of thing, or did you go to a proper studio, etc.?
It was a bedroom record for the most part. You know, you work with what you got.
Well, and it's not a bad sound for this kind of music, you know, which has a strong flavor of alt country and folk music, and you know, the sound of people singing on the porch or in the backyard or whatever it was. Did you grow up with that music in the house?
Well, I grew up in a Motown house. It was Motown and R&B and hip hop. You know, I was huge into Paula Abdul, so I don't consider her a folk singer or anything like. But I guess it was listening to a lot of country music. My dad's from Birmingham too, so
Alabama,
right? So it's kind of in the blood.
So a move from Buffalo to New York City and a move from the brass instruments to singing and playing guitar. The album is called New Way Home. It is out now. The band, led by Miwi La Lupa, have been performing songs from it here in the Soundcheck studio. Miwi, thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks so much for having us.
Brushed on usual colors and climbed to strange man's bed, walking in veiled moon's rain.
If you liked what you heard here, there's another song from Miwi's session on our homepage, soundcheck.org. Up next, the veteran producer Salaam Remy received a Grammy nomination this year for his solo debut. It's called One in the Chamber. He'll tell us about stepping out on his own, his work with Amy Winehouse, and more. Next on Soundcheck.
All I can ever be to you is the darkness that we know and this regret I got accustomed to.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. At the top of producer Salaam Remy's resume is his work with this artist, Amy Winehouse. He co-produced the Grammy-winning singer's hit album Back to Black along with DJ Mark Ronson, and he was working on her third album at the time of her death in 2011. He's also worked with the rapper Nas, with R&B singer Miguel, and the Fugees, and Alicia Keys. But last year, Salaam Remy released his solo debut album called One in the Chamber. And this weekend, that album is nominated for a Grammy in the Best Urban Contemporary Album category. When Salaam Remy joined us on Soundcheck back in October, I asked him why he was stepping out now as a solo artist after such a successful career behind the scenes.
I think for me it's just the process of also just having music for music's sakes. And, you know, I always loved the fact that my greatest success as a producer has also been an artistic success as well at the same time. So all of the Amy Winehouse at the moment when it happened or the Fugees at the moment when it happened was also as left as it was, you know, something that was successful. So with my project and in general, you know, what I'm doing with my new label, Flying Buddha, through my Sony imprints, is basically saying, like, look, if you want to hear music for music's sake, well, come over here. And with this whole project, it's a lot of the artists that I've worked with and their pop sensibilities, but them coming out and working with me in my orchestral musical space and saying, this is a body of work for the movie that I'm creating for my album right now. So, you know, it's a bit different for all of them, but at the same time, it's just where I live.
It has a very kind of cinematic sound to it, you know, the full orchestra and everything. That's you conducting the orchestra, right?
I actually didn't conduct it, but I, you know, did the arrangements and put the pieces together. And it's a spinoff of my film scoring work because I scored Sparkle last year. So that's where the Jordan Sparks track came from when she starred in Sparkle and I scored it. Or different pieces of it. But over the last 7 or 8 years, I've been doing a lot with orchestras in Prague, just experimenting and coming up with different pieces. So my experimentation of Eleanor Rigby turned into the Stephen Marley version. Or even when I had a song, and I'd be like, you know what, let's book a session every couple months and just try getting some different sounds and, you know, taking the arrangements to another level, which is a passion of mine. So this is my passion project in a way where I'm able to now let people hear and feel how far the music can go.
Now, most of the songs are original to this recording, but you mentioned Eleanor Rigby, the Beatles classic. You got Stephen Marley, one of Bob Marley's sons, to do the vocals here. How do you make those decisions to pair a particular singer with a particular song?
Actually, I mean, with Eleanor Rigby, it was just, once again, I was experimenting with the rooms and seeing, okay, what size room, what size arrangement I'm going to get to actually do that. A lot of it is just musical conversations and finding people who love music the same way that I do. So then that way, we're now just given the expression at that moment. So, no, that particular piece of it came out of just an idea and then an execution.
Let's hear a little bit of Salaam Remy's arrangement of the Beatles' Eleanor Rigby, featuring vocals by Stephen Marley.
Father McKenzie, writing the words of a sermon that no one will hear. No one comes near. Look at him working, darning his socks in the night when there's nobody there. What does he care? All the lonely people, where do they all come from? All the lonely people, where do they all belong? Died in the church and was buried along with her name. Nobody came. Father McKenzie wiping the dirt from his hands as he walks from the grave. No one was saved. All them lonely people.
Salaam Remy's version of Eleanor Rigby, featuring Stephen Marley singing. Salaam, the Grammy-nominated producer for artists like Nas and Amy Winehouse, Alicia Keys, the Fugees. His solo album's called One in the Chamber. It's out now. You don't sing on this record. There's lots of singers and lots of songs, but your job is what? To kind of
keeping it together. I mean, arranging it, and you know, ultimately, a lot of it is my vision as far as musically where we go. And something that I feel like I've owned as far as what my taste is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of times we'll create something and I'll just be like, I like it, but it's a little bit outside of my palate. Because ultimately, you know, your album is your plate of food. So this is basically that. And that's why, you know, there's 9 vocals, 3 instrumentals, but it's all still what I would feel and what I would represent as me.
And so it's people that you've worked with like Corinne Bailey Rae and right. Jordan Sparks and Akon. Now, Akon, he does the title track.
Correct.
What does that title mean? One: in the chamber.
Right. So, I mean, Akon's song is just one in the chamber straight mm-hmm. across, which, you know, you have to kind of listen to it and get into it. But basically, this is a story about him going and seeing a girl who he hadn't seen for a while. And he should have gotten away, but he went back, and now she has one in the chamber. Now she's pregnant, basically. So she has
okay.
one in the chamber. So it's a double entendre,
yeah.
But also it was a dangerous move that he made that now he's going to have to pay for.
I also wondered if it maybe was also a pun on all the strings, you know, the idea of chamber music.
Well, the album is definitely one in the chamber with the strings in that. So, no, the album is one as my first album,
mm-hmm.
semicolon, in the chamber, which definitely is a pun on the strings as well.
All right, here's a little bit of the title track from Salaam Remy, featuring vocals by Akon.
We'll never be the same now.
That is the title track from Salaam Remy's new album called One in the Chamber, the title track sung by Akon. Now, let me ask you something. That's the clean version.
Mm-hmm.
The original album version, when he says messed up in the radio version, he's saying something else on the record. So do you record 2 different tracks, you know, when you're producing the album specifically with radio play in mind?
With this song, I mean, we felt like once we did it with the regular version that is not as clean, then I just had him go and clean up those words on another track so I can do a quick edit and put it together. So there would be, rather than it just being bleeped out,
mm-hmm.
you know, which can be disgusting at times, I was just like, you know what, just say that word instead. And he made sure he had a version that worked the other way as well.
Right.
We didn't do the whole song over. We just did the
You just
words.
Had him do
the words.
The offensive parts.
Exactly. Those words. And
and all of the production on the voice, the auto-tuning and everything, that's you or him? I mean, how's that?
We're in the studio together. I mean, it's all the people. Pieces and different stuff, and even parts of it that seem like it's actually tuned, that's actually his voice going up. It's funny that Akon has Senegalese real timbre on his voice, so even if you think that he's actually been old, sometimes he's not.
Mm.
So that's his falsetto, which he's never actually used on a record before.
Wow.
He's actually singing higher, so that's not like him being pitched up like a chipmunk. He actually can sing like that.
We're speaking with Salaam Remy, the Grammy-nominated producer. Where did this all begin for you?
I mean, first of all my uncle's musicians. So my mother's 2 brothers, you know, one of them played saxophone around James Brown, the other one played keyboards at Sugar Hill Records and The Moments and whatever it was. And then my dad's brothers, one played with Lionel Smith, and then my dad himself worked with Belafonte. He did Jazzmobile, he did you know, disco records, Tana Gardner. He produced hip hop. He kind of went through all the different phases. So I would say a lot of the music was around me. Elvin Jones, the jazz drummer, made a drum set for me when I was 3 because he saw me in the club messing around with stuff.
Now, wait a minute. Elvin Jones. John Coltrane's Elvin Jones.
Correct.
Made you your first drum kit.
I was in the music store with my dad. It was a music store that's around like 46, just off of...
Off 7th Avenue.
It's a drum store on the second floor.
Yeah.
So I was in there as a small kid. I really remember being there. And he seemed to have been watching me walk around the store and seeing that I had a real sense of rhythm. And I must have been playing paradiddles at 3 or something like that, doing some complicated pattern. And he pretty much took, and I still have it in my grandmother's basement, a large floor tom, almost like a cocktail drum set, and took the large floor tom and made it into a kick drum and then put a snare and put it all together. My dad bought what he put together, like, no, this is a drum set for him. And so I had a real drum set when I was 3.
Wow. So were you a drummer first?
Initially, I guess that was my first instrument in that way. But ultimately, I could hear it all. So I just, over the years, continued to play keyboards a bit, play bass a bit, play whatever it is. And even now, I can pretty much play a rhythm section myself. On a lot of the songs, I'm playing the majority of the instruments, and I might have someone else add a guitar or a horn or whatever else it is.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of records, even the Carmen Bailey Ray song, whatever, it's pretty much me playing.
One of the things that really kind of showcases your command of orchestration, of arranging, is the fact that you've got instrumental tracks.
Definitely.
I mean, pop music used to be full of instrumentals,
you know,
and that it sort of disappeared for a while.
Right. I mean, I love that aspect of it. I mean, it's the same thing. I was working on stuff and looking at the orchestral aspect of it and felt that between, the instrumentals, I did a version of Keep Rising to the Top by Kenny Burke, which is a Queen's anthem party favorite from the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I remember the time growing up in New York in the Ed Koch era when it was I Love New York, when the Chuck Mangione Feel So Good was the theme of New York.
Right.
And everywhere you turned around, that horn wouldn't stop. So I felt like, as being a native New Yorker and feeling like those types of pieces were really important to me, as well as having vocal pieces, I could have made this all instrumental. I did an album before called Prognosis that was all instrumental orchestras.
And that was all recorded in Prague in the Czech Republic.
Exactly.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It became the Prognosis.
Right.
And then those instrumentals.
I get it.
Exactly. All those instrumentals became some of Nas's Life is Good album. It became Jasmine Sullivan's Bust Your Windows and Lions, Tigers, and Bears. So I was incorporating all of my orchestral pieces into my songs.
Bach did that. He would write pieces and then he would reuse them and,
Another spaces and find ways to do it. And for me, it's just an expressions of creativity and, making art for the love of music.
Well, let's hear one of the instrumental tracks from Salaam Remy from the album One in the Chamber. This is called, what are we saying here? Da 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 da?
Da 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 da.
Music from my guest, Salaam Remy. All right, I'll give it a shot. Da, 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 da.
There it is. You got it.
The album's called One in the Chamber, one of the instrumental tracks. So is this likely to appear, down the road as the backing track for someone else's song?
It's slightly possible. Who knows? But at this point, I'm enjoying it for what it is.
Yeah. Salaam Remy, of course, best known as a producer for people like Nas and Amy Winehouse and Alicia Keys. And you mentioned your own imprint on Sony Records earlier.
Right.
And you've begun producing another young singer, an actor, right?
Yes, I also have, for my Remy Fowler label, I have a couple different, this is on Flying Buddha. My Remy Fowler label is Mac Wilds, also actor known as Tristan Wilds, who we have a debut album out called New York, A Love Story,
mm-hmm.
us being native New Yorkers and getting our musical things together at this moment.
He was in The Wire.
He was on The Wire as Michael Lee on seasons 4 and 5, and he also was on 90210 as Dixon Wilson. For the last 4 or 5 years, Secret Life of Bees, Red Tails. He's a promising young upstart, but definitely there.
So what do you look for in, I mean, there's lots of promising young artists. What attracted you to Mac Wilds?
Number one, he's a great person. You know, that's for me, it's like good people, good music, good money will come, but good people, good music is my key. That's the start. And I looked at what he was able to do and just watched him develop. I actually didn't do any music with him until this year, but I just sat down and watched what he was doing on his own, gave him a couple pointers and let him develop himself in a lot of ways. And when I really saw that, I saw a window for what he was able to do and what I could actually bring to the table and support it. You know, I said, you know what, let's try something. And, you know, our try has turned into a great album called New Yorker Love Story, which I'm really proud of.
Salaam Remy, my guest on Soundcheck today. Salaam, great fun having you with us.
Oh, thank you.
Nothing's too much, words that I live by. That's just how I do. I'm young right now, but I won't be forever. So I'ma live it up like that's true. You might wonder why with me too. Said I don't mean to brag, but I live a life that most can only dream about. Yeah. So baby, come be my dream girl.
That's the song Own It by Mac Wilds, also known as the actor Tristan Wilds, who, as we heard, had roles in the HBO series The Wire and the recent reincarnation of 90210 on the CW network. Just another project from my guest Salaam Remy. I spoke with him on Soundcheck back in October. This weekend, his album One in the Chamber is up for a Grammy in the Best Urban Contemporary category. Monday on Soundcheck, a visit from Laura Cantrell. The Nashville-raised, New York-based singer-songwriter has a new record called No Way There From Here. She'll play songs from it in our studio. Also Monday, Godfrey Reggio, the filmmaker, who has collaborated with composer Philip Glass on movies like Koyaanisqatsi and the brand new one, Visitors, will join us to talk about their latest collaboration. And we'll have a wrap-up of the Grammys. And if you're watching the Grammys on Sunday night, watch them with us and play Grammy Bingo. The fun begins at 8 p.m. and you can get all the details at soundcheck.org. And while you're watching, follow us on Twitter @Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.